The interesting thing is, like the hairpin at Monaco, Lowe's hairpin, it's quite cool because like you'll be coming into there and the bodywork's on the floor and the hairpin's really slow. So when you slow it down, the bodywork goes pop. So you're actually lifting your head out the cockpit just to see that apex, because it's quite important to get those. So it's, yeah, that's cool. And then exiting the corner, the bodywork drops again. Oh, that's okay. I see where I'm going now.
Welcome to the Your Data Driven podcast. If you like this podcast, be sure to visit our website at yourdatadriven.com for more useful help and advice on setting up your race car, mastering data analysis, and driving faster. Welcome to episode 46. Today we have a fantastic guest lined up for you, the accomplished racing driver and coach, Nick Padmore. From the high-octane world of racing to the intricacies of car dynamics, we're going to delve deep into a range of topics that will hopefully give you a range of new perspectives to apply to your race. There's so much to take away from this conversation, not only about the racing, also how to manage the practicalities of life, including with your family in a racing environment. So as ever, grab a pen, grab a coffee, sit back and enjoy what Nick has to say. Welcome, Nick.
Well, thanks for inviting me on here. It's always good to have a chat and hopefully give you a little bit of insight to what I do. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. So Nick and I have been introduced by a mutual friend, but we have some backgrounds in terms of locations in our lives and passion for motorsport, which I think people will be really interested to discover, particularly about your work and what fills your days these days, Nick. But one of the themes that we always do for the show is try and work towards one or two takeaways that people listening can go away and do. So the stories are interesting, but it's always nice. So like, can I actually go and try and think about something differently or think about the different experiences you've had in terms of your sort of work in motorsports and work towards, people always kind of do this in my experience. And if only they did that, they would be better off. So, you know, let's have a little catch up on you, but also if we can work towards one or two of those takeaways, that would be really good. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds good to me. Yeah, I've been thinking. So,
oh, good.
Well, I'll give you some advice. Wonderful. A bit of prep.
Yeah, good man. Okay, well, look, let's discover a bit about you. So, who are you? What are you doing? What brings you here? What's your interest in motorsports?
I'm Nick Padmore. I've been racing all my life, so I started in karts in 1990 in the proper 100cc screamer era, and then just tried to work my way through the motorsport ladder. Had no money, so it's quite difficult. With my dad was involved with motorsport, he's raced minis all his life, so the natural thing for me was to try and get out of karts and then get into cars, which is, it's always a big jump trying to find the money to do that. And I've had a lot of help, you know. I've had a lot of help, and it's all contacts.
Okay.
You know, it's people you meet that you never know will help you in the future. Yeah. So, I've raced all the way through, and I've been racing historics now for probably 15 years.
Okay. So what did, because so, you went from karting to, did you go to the sort of single seater ladder that we have in the UK? Well, certainly at the time with, I guess, Formula Ford and things like that. Is that the?
Yeah, I did. What did I want to do? Didn't necessarily want to be a Formula One driver. I just wanted to. I wanted motorsport to be my job, my career. It's what I love. It's what we're all enthusiasts. We all love it, don't we? So I thought, well, everyone wants to do that, but I really want to do this. So I went from karting to Formula First. Now, okay. A lot of people are going to go, well, what's that?
Most of the people
like
are going to go.
It's like a brick shaped single seater with a Ford Fiesta XR2 engine, and built by Van Diemen, real big series in sort of the 90s and all the way out. I think it started in the 80s. So yeah, I did that for a few years. Me and my dad, we ran that ourselves. Well, we did okay. I finished second in the championship in 97 to Robbie Kerr. So that was good because we were up against a big team, and you know, that was proper lad and dad go racing. So it was good fun. And then after that, don't laugh, but I went to V6 Eurocar, which was like the NASCAR in the UK, which is like silhouette space frame cars. which was a disaster. Every time now I smell gear oil, it just reminds me of that season because it broke down every single race and there's gear oil everywhere. So I'll try and forget that season.
It never really took off, that one. It was a big sort of
push. That was the AS car, which this was the Euro car, which was the V6 and the V8, which was huge. So I'm going back like 97, 98, 99. That was Sonny Howard built the cars. They had Barry Lee in it, some real proper drivers. It was big. Yeah, it was good. But then they disappeared after that. It's a shame because the V8 were big bangers. They were great cars. Yeah, so I did that. And then I had like a break in British GT and a Marcus at the British Grand Prix, one race. So that was cool. That was something different. And then I did, the year after, I did the Kent County Formula Ford ZTEC Championship, which was great, with Pete Alexander Motorsport, which was really, really cool. I enjoyed that. Finished second in that. And then Palmer Audi that winter, did the winter series in Palmer Audi. And then, I'm trying to think now. And then I went and did the Fiesta Championship on the touring car package. So we ran that ourselves as well. That was like the Clio Cup, you know, for its time. It was a big one-week series. So we ran that ourselves. So it was good. Got a lot of depth for that. So enjoyed that.
When you were going through that, though, I mean, there must have been points where you're thinking, you know, in terms of choosing this as a career path or choosing, you know, versus doing something more traditional as a job and then doing this as your hobby. Was there something that sort of spurred you on to say, no, we're all in for this?
I love it. You know, that's what I love doing.
No one can see this. Nick has a huge smile on his face.
I'm so lucky. You know, I love the people in the sport. You know, it's great. So it was a drug right from day one. Obviously, my dad was, I went fishing before I went karting. The fishing was the big, big thing. So dad would go off racing and I'd go fishing. So obviously the love for fishing finished when I saw go-karts.
Did it?
I've been that.
Yeah.
But really, yeah, you know, once that bug had bit, that was it. I was in. And it's just, it's funny, you know, say a job. Well, I did have a paper round until I was 21 years old. So that was my testing. So every morning I'd go and do the paper round and I'd be rapid on the paper round. So it's quite funny. Brilliant. Obviously under the speed limits.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a dream. I just wanted to make motorsport my career. And I've been very lucky to do that.
Wow. Yeah. It's because I just wonder, because it's a, you say about the drug, and I think a lot of people listening will be nodding internally, if not externally, to that idea. And it's you know, just often interested to work out what it is that makes it that way. Because is it the speed? Is it the competition? Is it the knowledge bit, you know, so you can sort of outsmart someone, even if you're not competing, it's just the thrill. I don't know what it is that makes it so attractive and so addictive that we keep on coming back.
What if you didn't have to rely on paddock folklore anymore?
Get ahead of the curve. My weekly motorsports wisdom on driving, data and setup that you can read in just 5 minutes, completely free. Join thousands of dedicated racing and track drivers getting one article every Thursday. If you're enjoying this podcast, then Ahead of the Curve is for you. Subscribers are the very first to know about new episodes. Get deeper discussions, expert interviews, and behind-the-scenes racing stories. Head over to yourdatadriven.com and sign up for free today. Ahead of the Curve, where racing knowledge meets your inbox. And remember, you can also subscribe to the Your Data Driven podcast on any of your favourite podcast platforms.
Yeah, I think it's the atmosphere, it's the sound, it's the look of the cars, the smells, the people, you know, the tracks, they're all different. Yeah, and of course we watch it on telly or now with YouTube a lot, and we watch it and we think, oh, I want a bit of that. Can I do that? And then that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting. So I've been doing club level racing, and even at that level, which is you know, it's just amateurs, anyone on that grid
doesn't matter. You know, with that
loves it.
You're on the grid. You're on the grid. You know, exactly. That's so cool, isn't it? No matter what level you know, you do. It's you're going round and round doing laps in a race.
It is absolutely amazing. So go on there. So you've got to kind of formulate. If you've done the Festas, is it?
Did Festas in 2000. Yeah, we did that. It was okay. It was a lot of damage. Didn't really have the budget to sort of keep driving into people and carrying on. So that was that. And then really, I think my biggest break was one of my customers who I'd met whilst coaching said, I'm going to do a test in a radical at Mallory Park. And I'll never forget it. I turned up there and obviously from a Fiesta, you look at this thing, it's like a Le Mans car.
Yeah.
So he said, do you want to have a go? Oh, God, please. Boom, straight in the car. And I was hooked on sports cars. And, you know, about a year before, you know, we're watching the radicals at Brands, actually, at Paddock Hill Bend. I remember it so well. And he said, you need to get in this two-driver series. He said, look at Nigel Greensall, who's had a long career. That's what he does. He coaches the owners and then shares the car with them. So that was it. That was the start of a long time. I'm just trying to think, probably 7 years with Radical.
Wow.
So the first year was with a customer. Then I had a works drive. So we developed the Pro Sport, the SR3, then the SR8. Yeah, and that was just amazing. I think it put me on the map for two driver, sharing with the Jenkins driver and coaching all the time.
So tell us about your coaching then, because you mentioned it a couple of times. It's something that I've got into in the last few years, and I love it actually, but it's quite new for me. So I'm always interested to hear different people's approaches to coaching. We had a quick chat about Rob Wilson just before we started the show, and you know, all the different types of approaches. So what is it from a coaching point of view that, you know, you know, how do you approach coaching with someone?
Well, it's something that I've built over the last sort of 7 years, and it's something I really enjoy doing. People want to, most of them want to learn, and it's all about, you know, trying to get their confidence up. If they have a confidence, then they're going to listen, and then they're going to apply what you're trying to get them to do. So most of my customers they race historic cars, so they move around a lot. So you can imagine, you know, something with a lot of power always wants to go sideways. So it's trying to just say to them, well, yeah, that's normal. It's going to do that. It's the tire, it's the suspension, it's, you know, other things as well. So everyone's different. Every day's different. Every car's different. So you've just got to work out, you know, what do they want to achieve? You know, is it all about the last couple of attempts? No. And just making sure they leave at the end of the day and they're improving. They've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So one of the things that I hear from other coaches is there's sort of a difference in approach. And I've got a little experience in the world of Olympic sports as well. And working, you know, with those kind of coaches, sometimes I look at motorsports and think from a coaching point of view, we've got a lot of opportunity to learn from how they are developing humans and athletes. Whereas I think that, you know, they would put their hands up and say the other way around. I think they've got a lot to learn about technology and applying processes and data and things like that. So from the coaching point of view, from that mind's perspective, they have like an idea of like the instructor and then the coach as being kind of different roles that you play. So you're very much, you know, does the person know what to do? Are they doing it very well? And what other support do they need to be able to do what they already know they need to do? You know, there's different kind of challenges you've got depending on someone's stage. So is that something you've thought through with your coaching as well?
Yeah, I have. And the way I coach, it's not sort of turn up, there's that corner, there's the, you know, you've got to turn in. That's not what I do. So it's for me, it's the whole picture. It's the, obviously, you can go into how a race weekend works, and then you're talking about, you know, your fitness, your diet, your hydration before the event, during the event, and after. So that's something I do cover as well. But yeah, it's the car as well. It's not just, oh yeah, I'm going to coach you today. Actually, we're driving your car. How can I get that car better for you to feel more confident so you can drive fast and safer? So there's that element to it as well. So it's a whole package, and I'm not selling myself here, but that's what I enjoy doing. So rather than just, oh yeah, driver, this, no, it's the whole package.
Yeah. So does that involve? It's okay if you want to sell yourself. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But
please book on.
No. But it's the point in the sense of like, well, what is it that you are doing that is interesting? And I think that's what people are. You know, as long as I can go away and maybe think about that and think, oh, you know, well, I might give that a go myself. I mean, one of the things you sort of touched on there is that confidence. So I'm an engineer. So immediately from my point of view, I'm thinking, what can I do from a setup point of view, possibly, to encourage that confidence? So is that something you're talking about, or is it more like an approach in terms of trying to get them to build up speed in a particular way, or just drive the car in a way that you'd like them to you know, that you know that the car can perform in that way? What do you really mean by building up their confidence?
It's the, for one, it's showing them that the car will go through a particular corner at that speed in control rather than out of control, but also setting the car up for them to be able to carry that speed through. You know, I've driven with a lot of people where we can have the car like absolutely on the edge, really, really fast, put the gent driver in and just can't cope with it. So you have to come back with the setup to make it more forgiving, because as a pairing, you want to be as close as possible on that lap time. Rather than, oh, look at me, I'm really fast and the car's on edge. Oh, sorry, you can't go fast because you don't like it.
Yeah.
So it's the car and the driver, isn't it? And it's showing them that the car does behave like that. It's safe if it's moving around a lot, you know. Yeah, that's the way, that's the best way. And it works as a package to get faster.
So you talk about some of the different cars you've alluded to some of the cars you've driven, but I think, I think you've driven more recently quite a few of the heritage kind of cars or historic cars. I think that's where you're well best known for these days, I would guess. So what kind of cars have you driven that, for just to give people an idea?
So in the historic, I've driven everything from a Mini to a Formula One car. I've now driven 28 Formula One cars from 1958 to 2005.
Oh wow.
So you're looking at, you know, ground effect, flat bottom, the whole range. So, and then sports cars, 2 litre sports cars on the side of that, Group C. Yeah, so a lovely mix. And just when I think of these cars, they're just, wow, that livery's cool, that car was cool. Yeah, it's great. Every car's different. But I always go back to a Mini. Great car.
Yeah. Again, that smile's come back on your face.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's a giveaway, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, because I think that's probably quite an interesting point, because often people don't get the chance to drive such a varied amount of cars in their experience. So how do you adapt to the different cars, and what is it that, if you get into a car that you've not driven for the first time, is there something that do you have an approach that you're taking for that kind of learning, you know, to getting used to it?
Yeah, I get asked this a lot, and it's always a difficult one to answer. So I'm going to try my best here. But
I just wing it.
Go back to Speed Week, which was run at Goodwood in 2020, when the COVID and all that. So that weekend, I drove 7 different cars. So ranged from a Mini to a NASCAR to a Formula One car to a saloon car to a sports car. So there was a big variety. For me and my driving, it's always about my apex speed. So you think, what's he going on about? But I always aim to keep my apex, you're making a note of that. Apex speeds up. So obviously I'm very lucky to be driving some really cool cars, as we say, mainly historic. So you've got a lot of responsibility. So you've got to be sensible how you first jump in the car and try and learn it. You don't want to go too mad. But I don't really get a lot of time to learn the car. Like if you think for the revival, a lot of us get offered drives there quite late. So you'll be jumping in the car for the first time in qualifying. So you've got to produce a lap time, but also look after the car as well. So yeah, it's all about, you know, playing myself into it, maintaining that apex speed, rolling that car into the apex and getting on the throttle by the apex. And then you're just chipping away at that as you get going and more laps under your belt.
So With regards to that, because the ergonomics must be different, the systems are all different on these kind of cars, particularly with the new ones or the old ones or whatever. You know, you've got some with gears, others with other systems to change the gears. So how are you, do you have are you quite cautious to start with, or are you sort of thinking, right, okay, I could take it to this point and then I'm just going to see what I've got underneath me by something maybe with the first time you stand on the brakes or getting onto the throttle. How is it that you're playing yourself in there that means you're getting a time, but it's not putting these cars under too much stress, perhaps, and at too much risk?
Yeah, again, I'm struggling, but I think one of those, where I've been doing this a long time. I drive a lot of different cars all the time. So yeah. I think it's just once I get into it, it's drive and just chipping away at it. And it's, as I say, it's trying to keep that speed up. The brakes are all different. Like, go back to like a couple of years ago, I was at Harare and I raced the JPS Lotus 77. And then I jumped in an LMP2 car from 2012. And there was literally like an hour's gap between the two. So, and that thing, like the Lotus 77 was Gunnar Nielsen's old car, which is just an amazing car. I've raced a lot over the years. And then getting in the P2 car, I was like, this is all very nice, but it doesn't move around, doesn't feel particularly far. But then under braking and cornering, like, wow, that's impressive. So that took me a while because the brakes are so good and you can brake so late, but very digital. So very much right, 100 meters brake. Turn full throttle, oh yeah, traction, very very different, but you just got to adapt to it. But I'd like another shot in that. But yeah, they are, as I say, you've got to take your time and just build up to it, but not too long.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just sort of sitting here myself, sort of listening to all these different types of cars, trying to imagine what it must be like to, you know, you sort of get into a car for the first time and you sort of get, you know, settled in there, and it's like, right, you've got to go get down the pit lane, you know, without stalling.
yeah.
And all of that. But I mean, what kind of races have you done? Have you done some of the big races?
Yeah, I've obviously raced at the members' meeting at Goodwood, the Revival, Monaco 3 times now, historic, Le Mans Classic this year. Yeah, all the Masters Series. I've raced in Suzuka in a Formula One car. When I think about it, yeah, it's been pretty busy over the years. But for me, Monaco is just the place. You know, when I talk about Monaco now, I'm thinking, did I just really say that? And it's always been in a Formula One car, maybe two, maybe three cars over the weekend. Like this year, I drove the twin chassis Lotus 88 car, which was banned. Actually, the British Grand Prix, it tested. And, you know, Colin Chapman designed this car and it was going to be the business, and it got banned, so it never raced. So I was... Now, very luckily, Chrome Cars gave me the opportunity to drive it this year, and we went to Monaco with it. That's cool.
Wow. Yeah.
And I finished on the podium. So that was just, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, that ticks all the boxes, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's that like to drive then? If we're listening here, you know, we're trying to imagine what that must be like, but can you share some of that, the feelings of what that was like to drive that car in that place?
It's amazing. If you can imagine that, you know, a few people might have sat in a single seater, and this is big. So when you're sitting in it, the bodywork's quite high up.
Yeah,
you can't see on the camera, but because how it works is the body. There's obviously, you have your tub, carbon fiber tub, and the body sits on top of that. So in the pit lane, the body works like that. So you're going down the pit lane.
So that's up to your, like, your eye line sort of thing.
So the eye line. So, and as you're going down the pit lane, you're like, oh, okay, I hope that drops because I can't see the corners. So it's designed, the faster you go, the more that bodywork is used to push through the bottom of the car.
Yeah.
And give you ground effect. So it sticks to the floor. So, yeah, it just, as you pull out the pits, the bodywork just slams on the floor. We have to run a 40 mil ride height. That's the rules. So that's your minimum. So it does go, it goes, you know, low, but 40 mil.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, like, the hairpin at Monaco, Lowe's hairpin, is quite cool because, like, you'll be coming into there and the bodywork's on the floor and the hairpin's really slow. So when you slow it down, the body won't go pop. So you're actually lifting your head out of the cockpit just to see that apex, because it's quite important to get those. So it's, yeah, that's cool. And then exiting the corner, the body drops again. Oh, that's okay. I see where I'm going now.
So yeah, it was just when you don't want the bodywork to come up, it lifts up.
Yeah, exactly. And I've driven that car quite a bit now at Nürburgring, the old time GP, and then quite a bit of testing with it. And it's a very special car. It just needs a bit more work to get that bodywork to work all the time. But it is, yeah, it's an amazing opportunity. And the guys at Bright Tech who run the car, you know, have done a nice job of it.
Wow. That's a great story. I didn't realize that the bodywork moved like that, actually.
Yeah. And it's funny because at Monaco, we weren't allowed to use the front wing. So what's happening is the car was like power boating. So it's got a big sort of tunnel for the rear wing, and it was lifting the front of the car up. So over the start finish line in practice and qualifying, it was lifting the front of the car, and even through the tunnel. So going through the tunnel on the apex, it was just getting light. And I remember looking at my hands thinking, whoa, it's a bit more steering that time. And it was just squatting down too much on the rear. So for the race, we just went up a little bit stiffer on the rear, and that seemed to stop it squatting down too much. But, you know, no front wing. And then as soon as we put that on after Monaco, it certainly helped it.
So what other things have you driven then? That sounds like it's going to be hard to top that. But you said about Le Mans. So that's a different kind of event. Dark for a start.
Yeah, Le Mans Classic this is. So it's, yeah, that's cool. I raced this year Chevron B26, which is a 2-litre prototype for 1972-73. And that's cool. Mont-Saint-Straight, middle of the night, chasing a 935 turbo. The flames. And actually, my teammate, Marco Werner, was in the Porsche, and it, you know, you see things that, oh, I wish you had a photo of that, you know, that's cool. Because chasing that down the Mont-Saint when he was backing off, the turbos are glowing and the flames coming out the back was just, you know, yeah, major. It sort of his stand on. That was cool. And yeah, then I raced the Cheetah sports car as well, the same event, which was really good as well.
That sounds amazing. So I'm trying to think back to, because I could talk about the historic stuff all day. I'm just really keen to listen to it all. But I'm just also thinking about the people listening and what can we take from that and sort of go, right, well, how do I apply that into my own racing? So you mentioned the driving and the adaptability. We talked about coaching a little bit. You talked about setup and changing the setup to make the car a little bit more forgiving for a driver. So of any of those sort of subjects, what kind of things would you sort of, maybe there's one or two things you might suggest for us to think about, particularly on the setup, for example, like what would you do to try and make that setup a little bit more forgiving? Is that just sort of in tires or anti-roll bars or something like that? Is that kind of where we start, or
it's a mixture of everything, really. Some, you know, that you can get into a fashion of like the cars, certainly in historic racing, it's like, oh, the car's got to be so hard, really, really stiff, because that's what happens with the modern. So we can use that into historics. But don't forget, yeah, I don't know if you've seen some historic tyres, but the sidewall is huge. So the car moves on that sidewall a lot. So really, there's a big giveaway there anyway. So if you run the car really stiff, it's going to be quite nervous over the bumps and quite twitchy mid-corner. So it's just try, if you're new to it, it's a bit difficult, but just try to do it for yourself. What makes you, we go back to being comfortable in the car, what makes you comfortable to go through the corner or to brake later? It's just trying things. And if you have like someone who's good on setup, an engineer, they can help you, or a coach, you know, they can all help the car get better for you. I think, you know, if you go down the road where the car is too stiff, you're not going to feel it too much.
Yeah, it's a question that I get asked fairly regularly, actually. You know, is a stiffer suspension quicker? Because there's a sort of folklore about some of these things that you hear about, you know, uprated suspension and terms like that, where people are, where there's a folklore tradition because they've seen something in racing, and then that's become, that's what we need to do as a de facto thing. But it doesn't always translate to them and their car and that understanding. So it's interesting you say about almost making the thing more compliant, so given the tyres you've got there. So
yeah, It's like last week I was testing a Lola T70 Spider at Goodwood, and it had like a modern setup on it. And I know the cars well, and I know the track very well.
Yeah.
And I went out in that, and it was so stiff. Like, you obviously know Goodwood, breaking into the first corner there. It was over the bumps, and then try and turn, and we've got the crest on that first apex. It was a handful. Those Can-Am cars are a handful anyway, but
yeah,
this just made it so bad. And it was literally just going back a few clicks with the dampers all round, just transformed the car. And the owner couldn't believe it, because he's been driving it all year, and he's been saying, it feels nervous. It's a 60s Can-Am car. He's going to be nervous. But, you know, just by doing that, gave him that confidence, and then the lap time started to come down. But yeah, so we go back to feeling, confidence, you know, that's where it is.
I think, I mean, another thing that we talked about on this show a little bit before is not being afraid to try stuff and change things. And the, you know, if you've got some theory behind it, but it's kind of worth like trying some things rather than sort of pursuing something that feels unsettling, as it were. Well, you might as well try something different. And if, you know, the worst that can happen, you know, all being well, you still bring it back in one piece. But from a handling and feel point of view, you can always go back to what it is, you know, what you've had before. Yeah. It's just, well, let's try something different. The interesting thing for you is you've got such a broad range of experience and lots of different types of car that you can get into a car and have that feedback straight away. Like you obviously felt it was too nervous or too stiff straight away. Whereas somebody who hasn't got your experience, they'll be like, well, I don't have the confidence maybe or the knowledge to know the difference. But so they just keep it as it is and we'll just drive best we can.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that, you know, I've seen people do successfully is then to try, well, actually, well, it's just to try and change something. Yeah. Yes, we're not 100% sure if it's going to make it worse or make it better, but let's change something and see what it and see if we can feel the difference. And we've had a little bit of success with that this year, because I'm very much I'm an average engineer and I'm not very good driver. But the point being is that when, you know, think, well, actually, if I make this change, will I even feel it? You know, will it make any difference? And it's been surprising for me to experience that, because in theory it should be quite different. But then I was like, well, that's all very well for the laptop. But on the car, is it actually going to feel any different? And quite often it does. And you think, right, okay, so now I've got another sort of mental data point of, like, we've made this adjustment and it's felt different. So whether it was good or bad or whatever, it means that we've got something that we can like work with on the setup and try different things. And like you say, it's amazing that such small things can transform people's confidence.
Yeah. And it's when I've had this with my Mini that I run. It's like you go testing and you're there all day, and they're normally quite short sessions, aren't they? And it's not a cheap day out, is it?
Yeah.
And you almost get into the right, okay, yeah. And do you want to try a change? Oh, it's the next session. You don't get a chance. It's almost like I've suggested, you know, previously, is like you do your morning, right, for over the lunch, you have an idea of what you want to try on the car. So on the dampers, the roll bar, and give it a go. But always make a log in a book. I still have a book that I was making notes in sort of 98, 99 and 2000. And it's really good because you'll go back to that. You can go back, you know, on that test day and say, yeah, that worked, didn't work. And it's, why not? You're there for the day. You know, I know we're going to be going around doing laps and it all goes a bit quickly, but just give it a change and see if you like it or not.
So is keeping notes and feedback something that you still do, or you do like quite religiously? I'm quite a fan of that, and I don't see it done that often.
Yeah.
So, and I'm trying to encourage as many people as I can to make their own notes. And
yeah.
Is that something you do?
Yeah, I do. And after every car race or test, I always make a note on my phone. And then just so I can go back to it. And then, you know, that note will go to the owner or the team, and they got a full list of what I think of the car, plus or minus. You know, you can't be too shy, or I don't want to say that about the car. It is what it is. You know, it's only going to hopefully improve the car. But yeah, making notes You know, some of the cars I've driven are pretty technical compared to the historic cars. So, you know, I always make a mental note and the notes on my phone. Yeah, I like it. I just go back to it and think, blimey, yeah, that's cool. That was a good car. And then why not try that setup that you just tried on that car? Why don't you bring half of that over to the next one?
Yeah, absolutely. And so
it's good.
Do you make notes in terms of your... in terms of the driving, or is it what kind of things do you put on your notes? Because some people like a track map and they drive, you know, write different things, and they so if you're sort of a, well, you might put like the gears that you're going to use for each corner. You might put some references or something like that. Or people have got their, it's a very personal thing what they note down.
Yeah. But
do you do some of that stuff, or is it more kind of car setup balance, or is it any drivery type stuff as well?
No. For my coaching, yeah, a track map, and they get the map with all the references and everything else. For myself, it's set up. What did we try? What was good? What was not very good? What have I seen on another car? What would I like to try again? Those I really enjoy doing. I really enjoy having those little notes. And you've got to find the time to do that because we're all pretty busy. I hate flying. So on the way home, I'm a real nervous flyer. So on the way home, a lot of the races I fly back from, I'd always make notes on the phone just to take my mind off the turbulence, really. But yeah, you've got to make the time to try and remember, because we all do the race weekend, don't we? Yeah, great time, everything else. It's all gone pretty quick. It's like, oh, I've forgotten what this done. So you just get it done quickly and you won't forget it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because, you know, one of the things that when you are in that more of an amateur paddock, you know, and very much more responsible for everything yourself, and you don't have a team running you, you know, you are tight on time.
Right.
And things like this, I mean, I we haven't really talked about data or anything like that, but that's another sort of one that can get dropped in the heat of the moment because the car needs sorting out, or we've run out of time. Yeah. You know, these kind of things. So a lot of them are sort of nice to have, but I think the notes particularly are a good memento, but also a good reference because it's so busy, you can run like the morning, and then you get to the afternoon and you're like, what do we do this morning? You can't remember what you did.
But,
you don't know what you did. It's like,
what did I do? But also, you know, a lot of this is that after lunch, people get tired. You know, testing, thinking about this, the journey there, everything after lunch is difficult. You start nodding off a bit. So you need those notes just to go back, oh yeah, I've got to do that, you know, just to keep you pushing for the afternoon.
So we did one this year, which I should share actually with everyone. I need to get it tidied up. But we ended up doing our own timetable. And I did this largely, and it's my turn to smile now, because my family comes along, but they're not that bothered about race. My wife in particular is just like, literally, what, you know, why would anyone want to come and hang out here and do this? Because it's not super glamorous, and if you're not involved, you're interested, just like, we're just hanging. Yeah. And but one of the things was that I get quite nervous about a race, or, you know, things, the next session coming up, and so invariably we'd have this tension of like, they're all sitting around looking bored. So I'm feeling guilty about that, but also then I'm sort of stressed because I've got a race about to start. And I know I need to go and do things like tire pressures and make some decisions about things. And you have this sort of tension of like, what, you know, no one's enjoying this moment. And so what we did is we created a timetable, but our own personal time. So we had all the sessions that we were going to do. And then we said, well, what would we like to do before each one? Right. Well, we've got to make a decision about tire pressures. We've got to do, like, you may not believe me, but I do some sort of exercises and things just to warm up a little bit. And so, you know, so we do that for like, so I just need to book in some window, a time before, you know, to do that. And then after the race, we'll have a session where we'll literally just try, and I'll try and download my brain onto a piece of paper and have a bit of a chat with, you know, my friends who helped me. We talk about, you know, did that work or not work, and try and get some feedback from the session, you know, sort of, and get the car checked, you know. So that's the kind of, it's not just the period of time that you're out on the track. It's a sort of, this is a window before and after. But then outside of those times, we called it family time, and it was just like, well, let's go and do some stuff all together, because, you know, I'm not in no way stressed anymore. And so they, but they, it worked for them as well. They were like, well, we've got family time coming up at 1:30 and we'll see you then.
Yeah. And it's just being organized, isn't it?
It's just being organized.
Like you know what you're going to be doing for the day. There's your quali, there's your race or whatever. And it is, yeah, it's finding that time. What's quite funny is when I drive quite a few cars over the weekend, is trying to find that time.
Yeah.
Because you're nipping in and out of different cars and then you think, well, I haven't even had lunch yet. And that you know, might sound like a silly thing, but these things of drinking water, eating at the right times really do help.
Have you got a heart rate monitor on you for the day or anything like that?
In the past, I tried that. It was quite interesting. But I must try that again this year, actually. It'd be pretty good. But those things, as I say, the water, the dehydration creeps in is not good.
So
if you've got a late race.
One of the reasons I mention it is because I did it with a driver I was coaching, and he had just a, you know, just one you wear on your wrist, you know, nothing too serious. But we looked at he's quite a fit guy, so his resting heart rate was quite low. And then, you know, it did his first session, it kind of went up, you know, as you'd imagine. What I thought was really interesting is that when he got out of the car, his heart rate didn't come right back down to where it had been before. It stayed elevated.
Yeah.
And Norm. And I just think that because even though he wasn't in the car, we're at the races now, you know, we've got, and you know, the adrenaline's still there a little bit. We're going to go out again in a minute. And so what was really interesting for me was that I hadn't thought about that before. Is yes, you're using energy when you're out on the track, but when you're not on the track, make sure you sit down, have a snack, have some, you know, rest a little bit, because we all stand up and we just spend the whole day on our feet talking to people.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely.
And the fitness bit is a question. So, but you get to the end of the day, and he was pretty tired as far, you know. And then people like my wife go, well, he's only sitting in the car, isn't he, driving around? There's a bit more to
this. That's the classic thing, isn't it? Yeah, that's the classic thing. We're only sitting in the car driving around in circle. But as we say, like with something like the Revival, which is busy, so busy.
Yeah.
And I find that like you're up at sort of 8 o'clock and out, you know, you're at the track and you don't stop meeting people because it's a cool thing. You know, so many people that come to Goodwood and, you know, other races, at the end of the day, you're like, I've had to get in a couple of cars as well. You know, I'm not complaining, but you're going back to that, finding some time to chill out, get yourself ready. I do that before every race anyway. I'll try and find like half an hour, just go and chill, a few stretches, get my mind in gear, and then into the assembly area. God, the heart's going already. And away we go.
Do you listen to music or do you?
I miss it.
Do you listen to music?
No, I don't really. No. I tried that many, many years ago, but no, I just, so my race weekend starts on a Wednesday. So Wednesday comes and I'm already getting my eyes in and just getting organised. So by the time I get there, I'm just focused on what I've got to do and can't wait.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Look, Nick, I don't want this conversation to end, but I've just looked at the time. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been really fascinating. So look, just thank you so much for making the time and sharing your stories with us today and those tips. It was a real, you know, privilege to have you on the show and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and hopefully it gave your listeners an insight to what I get up to, and you know, if you can take a few tips with the coaching away from that, it's a happy days, really.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Well, how great to have Nick on the show. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed talking to him. What a fascinating journey and experience he's having in the world of motorsports. And it's much more than just speed. It's about the strategy, intuition, the data analysis, and most importantly, that love for the sport. I really hope you found this conversation as insightful as I did. Remember, whether you're on the track or off it, the key to success is in the continual learning. So keep learning, keep driving, and this is your host, Samir Abid, signing off until next time. You may know that at the end of season one, I wrote the Motorsports Playbook, a summary distilling the first 20 shows into nuggets of wisdom. I made the notes so that you don't have to. If you've not got it yet, go and grab yourself a copy from the website. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and visit us at yourdatadriven.com.